This is episode 361. Did you know that autoimmune diseases are on the rise? You're probably hearing more and more that people have celiac disease or Hashimoto's, Graves, thyroid problems, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, IBS, chronic inflammatory issues, etc., 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 and that people and medical practitioners are blaming bad luck and genetics. Well, in this episode, we discuss why wheat, gluten, plastic containers, pesticides on your veggies, and your bed sheets are causing this rise in autoimmune disease. And you really need to listen to all of this to understand what to do, because all disease starts in the leaky gut. And if you've been eating any wheat products, buying veggies from a mainstream supermarket, or using plastic, then you likely have some degree of a leaky gut. This is loaded with great information about where the problems are and how to begin the detoxification process and heal your gut. So let's dive into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Here we are hanging out and trying our very best to get healthy in this seemingly very toxic world. Well, not seemingly, it is a very toxic world. And as a part of that detoxification process of our lives, broadly speaking, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so that they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And going beyond our relationship with food and the feelings that drive us to eat and seek dopamine, I want to introduce you to Dr. Tom O'Brien, whom is an internationally recognized speaker focused on food sensitivities, environmental toxins, and the development of autoimmune diseases. Tom is considered a Sherlock Holmes for chronic disease and holds teaching faculty positions within the Institute of Functional Medicine and the National University of Health Sciences. He's the author of two books, You Can Fix My Brain and The Autoimmune Fix, and he's hanging out with us here today in the virtual podcast studio. Tom, welcome to the show, mate. How are you?
Thank you, Maddie. Very well. Very well.
I tell you what, I really like how concise and to the point your bio is.
Thank you.
Some people's bio tells goes for a very long time and tells me what their mum did last Wednesday. So I really appreciate that. But I'm curious to know, what got you into this world of autoimmune disease and talking about gluten and toxins? Because from my experience, people don't start there. Where did you start?
We have to go back to 1979, and my ex and I could not get pregnant. I was an intern at the time, about to go into my internship, and I called the seven most famous holistic doctors I'd ever heard of and said, "What do you do for infertility?" They all told me what they do. I put a program together. We were pregnant in 6 weeks.
Wow.
My neighbors in married housing had been through artificial insemination. We lived on campus. They'd been through artificial insemination, nothing had worked, and they asked if I'd work with them. And I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to hurt you." Okay. They were pregnant in 3 months. So now we're 4 months pregnant, hot to trot, ready to go, tell the world. And we were in Chicago. I was in school in Chicago. And our friends would tell their sister in Wisconsin who'd had two miscarriages. And she came down, "Please, can I talk to you? Please, please." Okay. And so I came out into practice ready to help every couple that were having reproductive system problems. And there's not much in medicine that's all or every, but this was every couple who had reproductive system problems. It didn't matter if it was fibrocystic breasts, premature ejaculations, low testosterone, polycystic ovaries, infertility, recurrent miscarriages. It didn't matter. Every single one of them had as a component of what was triggering their problem, they were eating foods that they didn't know were a problem for them because they didn't feel bad when they ate the food. Now we know, the science is really clear, that for every one person that gets gut symptoms with a food that activates an immune response, there are eight people that don't get gut symptoms. They get brain symptoms, or skin symptoms, or thyroid symptoms, and they don't associate what they ate yesterday is why their thyroid's not working so well today. So we think if you eat something and it's not good for you, it's going to make your gut hurt. And if you use that as your determinant criteria, you'll get it right 1 out of 8 times. You'll get it wrong 7 out of 8 times. So that got me started down this whole path. And we came out into practice and we had 31 new patients our first day in practice. It's been like that ever since. We've been very grateful for the receptivity.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's amazing. And so I guess I love that it started from a genuine desire to solve your own problems. Question though, why did you go to holistic doctors? Because that's a very unusual thing to do for anybody that's raised in the Western world at, you know, the ripe old age of however old you were in, you know, the was 79, did you say? Like,
yeah.
We don't usually start there, you know? Like, were you raised by parents that had an awareness of natural health or medicine?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's a good question. At the time, I was a long-haired hippie living in Ann Arbor, Michigan. My hair was down to my waist. I was a baker, of all things. I was a baker in a health food restaurant. And we made a destination bread, meaning people drove miles to come buy the bread. It was really, really good. And it was unyeasted, but it would rise without yeast. It would take 24 hours, but it would rise. And it was just delicious. So I was already into alternative movements in my late teens, early 20s. And there was a doctor. I used to read a magazine called Prevention Magazine. And back then, it was the real deal. It was Alternative Living Magazine with articles on regenerative soil, decades before people were talking about it, grow your own and all that kind of thing. And there was a medical doctor who had just graduated from the University of Michigan, and I was at the University of Michigan, so I felt an affinity right away. And he was writing case studies every month in the journal, in Prevention Magazine. Case studies, and he talked in everyday language. You know, guy would come in and say, "Doc, I got piles, hemorrhoids, I got piles." And then he would talk to him really simplistically, but he'd say, "Let's just change your diet. Let's try that and take a few vitamins and come on back in." And guy come back 3 months later, his piles were gone. But in the article, he would have the references, the citations from the medical literature of why he recommended the things he recommended. I said, "Oh, this is very cool. I could do that. And so that got me thinking about healthcare way back when I was 19, 20 years old, something like that. So it was Dr. Jonathan Wright, who has been a great in the field of holistic healthcare for 45 years, just a pioneer who's brought so many realizations to us. Everyone should read his book. It's in Amazon. Why hydrochloric acid is good for you. It's called the 40-40 rule. By the age of 40, you're only making 40% of the hydrochloric acid you used to, but you're still eating the same amount of food. And so you read his book and you say, "Oh, this just makes sense." And then you start taking hydrochloric acid with your meals and you sleep better. Your energy's up. Your symptoms start going down. What symptoms? Any symptoms. Doesn't matter. It can help anything. Anyway, that's Jonathan Wright. And that's just an excellent classic book that we all should read.
I, having looked through your work and listened to podcasts and read The Autoimmune Fix, I think it's so ironic that you were a baker, that this story started with you baking bread and working with wheat. And maybe yes. That's the perfect spot for us to begin, you know, that conversation around, you know, health issues, holistic health practices, and what we put into our guts and how that's related to the fertility experiences that you had in the beginning.
Yes. It's really critical. So with my ex, and we got pregnant and had a wonderful, healthy pregnancy and delivery. And I realized that, well, foods really have a lot to do with this. Okay, let's take a look. And so every patient that came to see me, one of the things I did was I looked at their foods and I would wonder, Let's just do a diet recall. Just write down everything you eat for 5 days, everything. Don't cheat. Write down everything. And, you know, I found consistently it was a primary approach to address their food selections, because really good food can be really bad for you. Let me give you an example. In the Journal of the American Medical Association, they published a study. And the editors of the journal said, "This is an elegant study using sophisticated biomarkers to demonstrate their point. Now, the editors of the Journal of the American Medical Association, arguably one of the finest journals in the English language, they don't give compliments like that, but they did here. So I knew I had to pay attention to this study. They looked at couples going to assisted fertility centers, and they ruled out all of the known contributors to success or failure: cigarette smoking, alcohol consumption, exercise, no exercise, socioeconomic class, race. They ruled all that out in an elegant way that you can't argue with their statistics. And they looked at one thing and one thing only. How many servings of fruits and vegetables was the woman eating a day while she was going through the attempts at implantation? Okay. Well, we all know the more fruits and vegetables, the better. No. They divided the women into quartiles, the lowest number of servings per day, the next, the third, and the highest number of servings per day. Those women in the highest servings per day of fruits and vegetables compared to the women in the lowest number of servings per day of fruits and vegetables, those in the highest category had an 18% less likelihood of successful implantation. Wait, what?
Yeah, what?
The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the worse the outcome. And if they did get pregnant, they had a 26% less likelihood of a live birth. They lost the baby to miscarriages and stillbirths. Wait, what? The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the worse the outcome? Yes. And this was an elegant study using sophisticated biomarkers, and it came from Harvard. There was a group of women, however, a subcategory of group of women that were eating organic. And in that category, the results were the exact opposite. The more fruits and vegetables, the better. Now, here's the good news. Women were put in the category of organic consumption with these dramatically different results if they ate 3 meals a week organic, not 3 a day. 3 a week. If they ate 2 meals a week, it wasn't enough. They had the bad outcomes. But if they ate 3 meals a week, completely reversed the outcome. Why is that? The authors did not address that question, but I suspect if you're eating organic whenever you can, you probably have organic shampoo in your shower and organic soap at the kitchen sink and healthy toothpaste. You're doing the little things that you can that make a difference. And it's the accumulative efforts you put out to do the right thing, whatever it is, whatever the right thing is. But it's the accumulative efforts that keep taking a little bit more off of that inflammatory state, a little bit more off of that inflammatory state. This is dramatic. This is like, wait, what? And you can't argue with the study. It's the pesticides, rodenticides, fungicides, antibiotics, glyphosate in the tomatoes and cucumbers and cabbage. The more fruits and vegetables you eat, the worse the outcome because they create so much more inflammation in your body. Because of the toxic chemicals, the fruits and vegetables, never before in history have humans been exposed to as many toxins as we are now. And these things accumulate in your body. I'll give you one more study, then I'll pause. Chicago, 2016, they looked at 346 pregnant women in the 8th month of pregnancy. And they collected urine and they ran tests to see how many phthalates in the urine. Phthalates are chemicals used to mold plastic. The ones that most people have heard of are called BPA. Bisphenol A. There are many others, but that's the most popular one. And they put the results of how many phthalates in the urine into quartiles, the lowest amount, the next, the third, and the highest. They then followed the children of those pregnancies, the offspring of those pregnancies, for 7 years. And when the children turned 7 years old, they did Wechsler IQ tests on them, the official IQ test. Once again, not much in medicine was all or every, but this was another one of those everys. Every child whose mother was in the highest category of phthalates in urine in pregnancy, compared to the children born of mothers in the lowest category of phthalates in urine in pregnancy, every child born from a mother in the highest category, their IQ was 7 points lower. Every one of them. 6.7 to 7.6 points lower. That doesn't mean anything to anyone until you understand a 1 point difference in IQ is noticeable. A 7 point difference is a difference between a child working really hard, getting straight A's in school, and a child working really hard, really working, getting C's.
Significant difference.
This child doesn't have a chance in hell of ever excelling. They don't have a chance. Now just go to Google and type in phthalates and neurogenesis, nerve cell growth. Here come the studies. The higher the phthalates, the more inhibition of brain cell growth. And so mom's putting fingernail polish on, since the time she's 5 years old, on her 10 little fingers and 10 little toes. What people don't know is that the phthalates from polish are in your bloodstream in 4 to 5 minutes. Now, wait, what? Yeah, the phthalates, chemicals used to mold plastic, that's what makes the polish harden, is the chemicals in there called phthalates. They're in your bloodstream in a few minutes. Well, there is no evidence that the amount of phthalates that leach into your bloodstream from applying nail polish is toxic to humans. That's how they get away with this. That you have to prove the amount of chemical that you're exposed to in a 24-hour period is toxic to humans. It's not. But it's accumulative in the body. So give me a 5-year-old girl painting her 10 little fingers and 10 little toes for 25 years. Once a week. Now she's pregnant, hopefully has a healthy pregnancy, no signs of a problem, healthy delivery, great. But if she was in that highest category of phthalates, her baby's brain never developed properly in utero. And it starts to show at 7 years old with executive reasoning and rationale and how a child can process information. They're much more compromised than those mothers who were in the lowest category of phthalates. Then you learn, wait, if I put my leftover food in a plastic storage container in the refrigerator, the next day the food's got phthalates in it? Yes, the plastic containers leach chemicals into the food. Well, I can't taste it. We'll put that on your tombstone. She couldn't taste it. Doesn't matter if you can taste it. It's in the food. Or you go to a coffee shop and you get a plastic cup, a paper cup. How come paper cups don't leak? Because they're lined on the inside with phthalates that keep the liquid inside, but it gets into the liquid. And you got a plastic lid on it. And the steam from the hot coffee condenses on the underside of the lid, drips back down into the coffee full of bisphenol A. And you put the coffee cup up to your lips, it hits the underside of the lid, tapers down into the opening. You're drinking the coffee full of bisphenol A. Now just go to Google and type in bisphenol A and thyroid problems as an example, or bisphenol A and brain. Here come the studies, how these toxic chemicals affect our bodies. Well, there's no evidence that the amount of phthalates that leach into your coffee from a paper cup and with a plastic lid is toxic to humans. That's how they get away with it. In the European Union, there are over 10,000 chemicals completely forbidden in the countries of Europe, without exception. In the United States, there are 12. It's all politics, it's all money, millions of dollars to keep the status quo while you are poisoning yourself and your children. Wake up.
I assume when we're talking about these toxins that the reason that they get away with those disclaimers is because they don't cause consequences fast enough.
That's exactly right.
And yeah, so that they can say, oh, it doesn't happen in a week or a month or a year, but...
No, 24 hours. 24 hours. It's the Toxic Substance Control Act of 1976. It is still the regulating guidelines at the federal level in the United States for any chemical brought in. And the article that made me aware of this was in the journal Pediatrics. And it was a message from the board. It was a policy statement from the board of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And they said, we have failed miserably to protect our children from chemicals. And then they talked about the TSCA, the Toxic Substance Control Act. And at the time, it was 27 trillion pounds of chemicals manufactured or imported into the United States every year. That number doesn't mean anything to me. So I divided 27 trillion by 365 days, and then I divided it by 330 some million people. It's 247 pounds per person per day.
Yeah, wow.
Five 50 pound bags. That sofa behind you is soaked in flame retardant chemicals that outgas into the air. The plastic frame around your picture on the wall behind you outgasses phthalates into the air. They're minute amounts. You can't smell it. You can't taste it. You can't see it, but you're breathing it every day. The sheets that you put over you and the blankets to sleep on at night are soaked in flame retardant chemicals. Well, I've washed them 30 times. They still outgas the chemicals into the air. You breathe the chemicals. Well, there's no evidence that the amount of flame retardant chemical that you inhale from sleeping on your bed is toxic to humans. That's how they get away with it. And because there's more and more coming every year into our environment, people today, this is the primary reason why every autoimmune disease is going up 4 to 9% a year, every year. Every society, when you look at the numbers of children that are on mind-altering drugs like antidepressants or anti-anxiety, it's almost 20% of the kids in some countries. It's unbelievable what's happening. Well, there's no evidence that the amount of toxins your child is exposed to affects their brain. That's how they get away with it, because in one day, what they're exposed to, there's no evidence it's toxic, but it's the accumulative effect. So now give me a 30-year-old woman that's going to an assisted fertility center who has a lifetime of accumulating these toxins, so her body's very inflamed. She doesn't know it. It's called chronic low-level inflammation that's damaging tissue, damaging tissue, but she's trying to feel fine. And, you know, they're going to assisted fertility center, and she's, the more vegetables she eats, the better, she believes, but she's being exposed to more and more chemicals that have already accumulated, causing all of this inflammation in her body. Now it takes her over the edge. Now she has another miscarriage.
Yeah.
Wake up. This is not the world that you knew 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It's very, very different now. And you have to have a strong offense to play defense. You have to have a strong lifestyle pattern to protect you and your family from this toxic world that we live in.
Yeah.
And so you learn a little bit more all the time of how to protect your family.
Yeah, I think I like what you said in a little bit earlier on when you were talking about the fact that the people who ate organic or were more conscious about eating organic were probably also more conscious about buying organic products for their shampoo and their other products. And I know for myself, as I've gone on this journey of, you know, cleaning up my life and understanding holistic health, is that slowly everything in my life, you know, all the way down to my underwear, you know, is the material is changing and the place that it's been sourced is changing. And same with the products in underneath the kitchen sink, in the laundry, you know, all of that kind of thing. It's slowly changing.
You know, that's exactly right. It's exactly right. And as you do these little things, and you can't tell because you're doing it every day, you can't tell what level of improvement you're getting, how much is your low-grade chronic systemic inflammation going down. You can't tell. You really can't. But now you're traveling, you're at the airport, and you call for an Uber. And the Uber driver comes and you get in the car and he's got one of those stinky things hanging on the rearview mirror to make the car smell nice, and you get a headache because you're no longer living in that toxic world. When you're exposed to those toxins, your body goes, whoa, wait, stop. Let me out of here. You know, that as you clean up your body, you become more aware of how toxic the world is around you.
Yeah, which is like the burden of knowledge, right?
That's right. That's right. Now, you've got this podcast that you call How to Not Die Sick and Tired or something like that, right?
How to Not Get Sick and Die.
Yeah, how to not get sick and die. What you're talking about is reducing the gap between a healthy lifespan and a total lifespan. And there's a substantial difference. And the World Health Organization measures this. Many different organizations measure healthy lifespan. So let me just tell you the stats on this, that the average male disability-free life expectancy is almost two decades shorter than total life expectancy. And it's higher among males. The average is about 61.8 years of a man's life is disability free. For women, it's 60.5 years of their life are disability free. But the lifespan of women is older than men. Women, it's 82.8 years. The World Health Organization tells us that's the average lifespan for women in industrialized countries. And for men, it's 78.8 years. So women live longer, but they have a shorter, healthy life expectancy, which means the last 20.1 years of their life, 24% of their total life, but the last 21 years are with disabilities. You want a healthy lifespan? That's what you want. You want the gap between healthy lifespan and total lifespan to be really small. You know, ideally, we all go to sleep at night and we don't wake up in the morning when our time comes. No suffering, right? No disability. But people don't know these statistics because medicine doesn't want you to know these statistics because we want you to take the medicine for the last two decades of your life. That's how they make their billions of dollars. Wake up. This really should be the Wake Up podcast.
I was going to say, I wanted to walk into another big wake up conversation because talked about eating organic so that we're reducing our exposure to toxins. And there's possibly also a slight increase in nutrient density in those vegetables as well.
Right.
And fruits. Talked about, you know, all of the phthalates and the plastics and the BPAs coming off almost all of the products in our homes and our lives that we need to begin transitioning, which obviously takes time. The other one, which is tied back to when we were talking about you being a baker, that is the most consumed, you know, grain in the entire world and how that impacts us. Can you lead us down that conversation?
Yeah, it's, you know, Max Planck was a philosopher of sorts. And he said, you know, in medicine, you don't change the paradigm of medicine by educating the leaders. You wait for them to die off while you're educating the younger generations. And we've had many deans of medicine come through our five-day program at the Institute for Functional Medicine. You know, we invite them, give them a scholarship, and they come in. It's 5 days, and we've got them from 7 in the morning till 6 at night every day. And it's always sells out, hundreds of doctors, and we always invite a dean of medicine to come. And they all say the same thing. It used to surprise us. It doesn't surprise us anymore. But they say, wow, this is really medicine. This is health care. This is really fabulous health care. Teaching doctors what tests to do for function, looking for what's not functioning right, and then helping the patient get back to better function. That's how you stop disease, get back to better function. So this is really great health care, but it'll take us 10 to 15 years before it's part of our curriculum. And we say, well, why is that? Well, now we know. Because the dean of medicine now has to go back to the university and talk to the dean of gastroenterology and tell them that what they're teaching is all wrong. That's not going to happen. The dean of gastroenterology has got his own fiefdom. You know, he's the dean. and he chooses the textbooks and he hires the professors and he knows exactly what they're teaching because that's his program. You're not going to change his program. You got to wait for him to die off and then you get the younger generation, right? So you look to the science and whether it makes sense or not, irrespective of if the leaders in education are embracing it or not. You look to the science. So I'm going to take you to Professor Alessio Fasano, who is a professor of medicine, Harvard Medical School, a professor of nutrition, Harvard School of Public Health, the chief of pediatric gastroenterology at Mass General at Harvard, the director of the Celiac Research Center at Harvard, the director of mucosal immunology, that's the lining of your lungs, the lining of your gut, the lining of your brain at Harvard. This guy has five titles. Any one title is a lifelong dream for someone at the top of their field. He's got five. We think he's going to win the Nobel Prize. We do. Because it was him and his team in 1997 that identified the mechanism of this protein called zonulin, which is what causes leaky gut. It's when you increase this protein, zonulin, you get a leaky gut. And they've been publishing on this now for over 25 years, many hundreds and hundreds of papers, literally. I think it's over 430, 440 papers now. Fasano is always so careful with what he says so that he's not misquoted. But he's also accurate, very accurate. And this is what they're teaching at Harvard Medical School now. So you'll see a paper, and there'll be eight authors, researchers on the paper. And the last one, Alessio Fasano, he put his stamp on it, right? So you know, whoa, this is a Fasano paper. Okay, I'll read this one. He wrote this paper all by himself, no one else, which gives you a sense of the priority of the message. That this is coming from the guru himself, right? In the world of science, this guy is right at the very top of the field. So many accolades, running so many departments at Harvard, teaching the younger doctors. This paper he wrote himself, and everyone should get this paper and read it. It's a little geeky. You may have to read it two or three times, but when you understand these principles, it makes such sense to you. It makes perfect sense. So the title of the paper, All Disease Begins in the, quote, leaky gut, the role of zonulin in the development of chronic inflammatory diseases. All disease begins in the leaky gut. Well, wait, I've heard that before. Where are you? Hippocrates said that over 2,000 years ago. All disease begins in the gut. And we're saying the same thing today. Functional medicine, this is what we teach. All disease begins in the gut. And Fasano talks about the perfect storm in the development of chronic inflammatory diseases. Now, what I didn't mention earlier is that the CDC tells us 14 of the 15 top causes of death are chronic inflammatory diseases. Everything except unintentional injuries is a chronic inflammatory disease. The inflammation is there for years. While you feel fine, you think, but you've got this low-grade inflammation that's killing off tissue, killing off tissue, killing off tissue. So all disease begins in the leaky gut. And he talks about the perfect storm in the development of chronic inflammatory diseases. There are five components to the perfect storm. Number one, genetics. You can't do a thing about the genes. That's the deck of cards you were dealt. And doctors say, well, we're going to turn off those genes. You can't turn genes off. Genes operate on dimmer switches. And you can dim the gene down so it's not expressing itself like the gene for Alzheimer's, the gene for breast cancer. It doesn't mean you're getting breast cancer. It means if you have too much inflammation, that's likely where it's going to show is breast cancer. But it doesn't mean you're getting breast cancer. So you pull at a chain, it always breaks at the weakest link, always. It's at one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys. Wherever your genetic weak link is, that's where the chain's going to break. Okay, so Stop pulling on the chain so hard. Well, what's the pull on the chain? Inflammation. That's the pull on the chain. So number one of the perfect storm in the development of chronic inflammatory diseases is genetics. And whatever. Now, if you've got the gene for cystic fibrosis, that's different. That person likely is going to get cystic fibrosis and have a shortened life. Unfortunately, you know, science hasn't caught up on that yet. But the vast majority of genes that we have do not tell us we're definitely getting a disease. It tells us you pull at the chain too hard, that's where it's going to break. Okay, don't pull on the chain so hard. So that's number one. Number two of the perfect storm, environmental triggers. It's the environmental triggers, the things that we're exposed to that turn up the dimmer switch or turn down the dimmer switch of your genes. And the most common environmental trigger is what's on the end of your fork. There are many others, but that's the most common one, is what's on the end of your fork. Number three, when you have way too many environmental triggers coming in your food, way too many, you kill off the good guys in your gut and you have more bad guys in your gut. That's called dysbiosis. Geek word, but just means too many bad guys, not enough good guys. When you have dysbiosis, too many bad guys in your gut, it creates an inflammatory situation in your gut. So with dysbiosis, you get this inflammation in your gut. Whether you feel fine or not, it doesn't matter how you feel. This is going on inside your body. That's number three, the inflammation from the dysbiosis. Number four, Mrs. Patient, your digestive tract is a tube. It starts at the mouth, it goes to the other end. One big long tube winds around in the center there. It's about 20, 25 feet long. So when you swallow food, it's not in the body, it's in the tube. How does food get from the tube into the bloodstream to go everywhere? That's digestion and absorption, okay? But this tube is lined with cheesecloth. Do you know what cheesecloth is in Australia?
Yeah, we use cheesecloth or gauze.
Okay, great. I'm not sure if that was the word that you use. But when your grandmother is filtering the gravy that she made, she pours it through the cheesecloth. It's only the pure liquid and no clumps of flour or anything. The cheesecloth grabs all that. The inside of your gut is lined with cheesecloth from the mouth all the way down. There's a cheesecloth. When you have dysbiosis, inflammation in the gut, because too many bad guys and not enough good guys, you tear the cheesecloth. Now, the purpose of the cheesecloth is that only really small molecules can get through into the bloodstream. If you think of protein like a pearl necklace, and the acid in your stomach undoes the clasp of the pearl necklace, now you have a string of pearls. And your digestive enzymes act as scissors. Snip it smaller, snip it smaller, snip, 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 until you're down to each pearl of the pearl necklace called an amino acid. Those are the building blocks to make new muscle cells and bone cells and brain cells. The amino acids are small, so small, they go right through the cheesecloth into the bloodstream. That's how you absorb your nutrients. And that clump of that pearl necklace, the clump of hamburger that you chewed three times and gulped down instead of chewing 10 times or more, but that clump of meat can't get through the cheesecloth into the bloodstream until it's been snipped down small enough. Then it can go right through into the bloodstream. The problem is when you've got dysbiosis, number three of the perfect storm, it creates this inflammation in your gut that tears the cheesecloth. That's leaky gut. Now, these molecules of food in the process of being snipped down, it's why your gut's 25 feet long, is it takes much longer to snip down prime rib than it does a banana, right? So you need to have enough time to snip it down. But now you've got a leaky gut. Now, these bigger molecules that are only partially digested, they're called macromolecules, big molecules. They get through into the bloodstream. Oof. And your bloodstream is just a highway. Everything's going the same direction, but it's just a highway and there's no lanes of traffic. Everything's bouncing into each other, right? But that's number four. And the perfect storm is the leaky gut. Now you've got these macromolecules coming into the bloodstream or on the highway. And the immune system says, whoa, what's that? That's not something I can use to make new bone cells or brain cells. I better fight that. Now you've got chronic systemic inflammation. Number five, the immune system activated, trying to protect you from these molecules that got through the leaky gut into the bloodstream. 14 of the 15 top causes of death are chronic inflammatory diseases. And it manifests wherever the weak link is in your chain. That's where you go down. But it's the pull on the chain. It's the inflammation that we all have to deal with. But nobody's taught you this. But it's basic 101 information. You know, if you go to university, you start with your first English class or your first math class, it's math 101. Then you do math 102. Then next year, your second year, you do 201, 202. But it's basic information. You want to be healthy? You want to extend your healthy lifespan and shorten the gap between healthy lifespan and total lifespan? You reduce your inflammation. That's how you do it. And there are many, many studies on this. And this is what they're teaching at Harvard Medical School right now. It's so cool to know that the younger docs coming out, now they've got a battle with the dean of gastroenterology or the head of the hospital gastroenterology department, because they're a young stud and they think they don't know anything, those young ones. But the young ones actually know what's current and what science is telling us. So it's going to be a few more years, but it's coming. There's more and more young docs now coming out that understand these principles.
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. Yeah, it's something that I found concerning working in a hospital system, just how, you know, I was young, I guess, and fresh out of university and had the idea that scientists were curious and drivers of exploration. And actually, the older that people seem to get in the medical scientific establishment, the more closed-minded they become because they're limited by the system that they're within, and the questions they have to ask need to appease famous publishers, and you know, they need to get, you know, peer reviewed by famous doctors and professors. And all of that has to be in line with, generally speaking, a single train of thought that satisfies the right people. And it becomes a social political conversation more so than a seeking of the truth.
Exactly right, Maddie. But this is the key to health. Stop pulling on the chain so hard. It's an easy concept to say, okay, that makes sense. But it's a very difficult concept to implement because you have to find out how are you pulling on the chain? Where's the inflammation coming from?
And speaking of that inflammation, and you mentioned in as you went through all of those markers of the perfect storm, you mentioned biting into a burger. Now, a burger usually comes wrapped in a wheat-filled bun. So how does wheat and gluten impact the gut and create leaky gut?
When you read Fasano's article, All Disease Begins in the Leaky Gut, The Role of Zonulin in the Development of Chronic Inflammatory Diseases, Zonulin's a protein that opens up the leaky gut. When you read his article, he tells you the two most powerful triggers for leaky gut are exposure to small amounts of bad bacteria and its exhaust called lipopolysaccharides. That's the cause of sepsis in hospitals. The number one cause of death in elders in a hospital is sepsis, and it's just accumulated LPS. It's been going on for 30, 40 years, and they finally cross the line and you can't put the fire out anymore. But the two most common triggers, tearing the cheesecloth, are exposure to small amounts of bad bacteria and its exhaust, and gluten. Those are the two most common triggers. No human can digest gluten. It's impossible. There are many, many studies on this. And it activates this inflammation, this tearing of the cheesecloth in every human. Maureen Leonard, very famous gastroenterologist at Harvard, she did a literature review of over 60 studies on that topic. And the conclusion in her paper published in 2017 in the Journal of the American Medical Association, gluten activates transient intestinal permeability in all humans who consume it. So if you're human listening to this, sometimes your wife may not think you're human, but if you're human, this is you. And it doesn't matter how you feel. You remember how I started this whole conversation off? The ratio is 8-1 for those that feel bad when they eat a food compared to those that don't feel bad. If you think you've got to feel bad when you eat a food to determine that it's bad for you, you'll get it right 1 out of 8 times. Every human gets leaky gut, tears the cheesecloth when they eat wheat. The science is very clear. It's because the structure of the wheat, our enzymes don't break it down into each pearl of the pearl necklace. We can't do that as humans. So all we can do is break it into clumps of the pearl necklace. They're called peptides. And those peptides, our ancestors, before agriculture, were nomads. They followed the herds. Their primary concern was always food. Where am I going to find food? Then shelter and safety, but it's always food. They pick something up off the ground. First, they smell it, then they nibble at it, then they eat it. If there were bad bugs on that food that they couldn't identify, you have sentries standing guard inside the first part of your small intestine. Because really nothing from the stomach gets into the body. It's got to go from the stomach into the intestines. That's where it gets absorbed into the body. So right in the first part of the small intestine, they're called toll-like receptors, T-O-L-L. Toll-like receptors. I think of the soldiers at Buckingham Fountain or Buckingham Palace. Those guys with the big hats, right? They're dormant. They're just standing there. But don't mess with those guys. Don't mess with them. Toll-like receptors are dormant in the first part of your small intestine. But they're watching everything that comes out of the stomach. Everything. Their job is to identify a bug. And when they see a bug, two things happen. First, they activate zonulin. That's the protein that causes the leaky gut. And why is leaky gut good for you? Leaky gut's not bad for you. Excessive leaky gut is bad for you. But why is leaky gut good for you? Because when our ancestors would eat something that may be poisonous or toxic to them, the leaky gut brings water into the intestine from the body, and it washes out the bug with the poop. That's the job of leaky gut. It's a really good thing. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have that. Those ancestors that did not have good toll-like receptor function, they died. They didn't reproduce.
So it acts in a way of triggering a diuretic response or a diarrhea to detoxify the gastrointestinal system.
That's exactly right. That's the purpose of leaky gut. And those that had good leaky gut, they survived, they reproduced, their prodigy carry those genes. We're all the children of those survivors 10,000 years ago. This happens in every human, every time we eat wheat. Why? And Fasano tells us in the article that I quoted to you there, and his words are, gluten is misinterpreted as a harmful component of a microorganism. That toll-like receptors look at this thing coming out of the stomach. Look, it's a bug, because the protein structure of it looks like the outside shell of a bug. So it activates this whole defensive mechanism right away. There's no discussion. Well, you know, it's not really that bad, so maybe I'm going to relax. There's no discussion. This is done in 5 minutes. When you see the videos from Harvard of how this happens, they're really cool to see. Within 5 minutes, you got leaky gut when you're exposed to wheat. And this happens in every human, every time they're exposed to wheat, without exception. When you read the science, it's like, what? What? Well, how come I don't feel bad? Well, 8 to 1. For every one person that feels bad when they eat wheat, there are 8 people that don't have any gut symptoms. They get brain symptoms or thyroid symptoms or skin symptoms or joint symptoms. So every person should do the proper test to see, is my immune system fighting wheat? The proper test is called the wheat zoomer, because you zoom in on the problem. And when you do that test, because it looks at 26 different components of wheat, not just one or two. Most laboratories only look at one or two, but there are many, many more. And when you do the wheat zoomer, you say, wow, wow, my immune system is really fighting this. Wow, I don't feel bad when I eat pizza, but wow, okay, I'll give this a shot. And then you give up wheat completely. You don't cheat. You give up wheat completely. And in 3 weeks, you've lost 10 pounds. Your energy's up. You're sleeping better than you've slept in years. I mean, it's so common that we see those kinds of responses from people. It's very, very common, because finally, they're no longer throwing gasoline on the fire. They're no longer activating that inflammatory cascade, the perfect storm that I just went through for you, that perfect storm pulling on the chain, and it manifests as Alzheimer's, or it manifests as Hashimoto's thyroid disease, or it manifests as MS, or it manifests as rheumatoid arthritis. Doesn't matter how it manifests. Doesn't matter. That's just your genetics.
I'm curious to hear what you say in regards to people. So let's say when they go to Europe, they don't have a gluten intolerance. Like, what is the difference? Because the argument that we often hear is that there's less pesticides and that they've got more regulation around GMOs on the wheat products in, say, Italy compared to Australia or the USA.
Yeah, that's a theory, and that's nonsense. There's no evidence for that. But, you know, it's rational. It kind of makes sense, but that's not what it is. There are many components in wheat. Not all of them are bad for you. 78% of the prebiotic in the average Western diet is from wheat. They're called arabinoxylans. Not everything's bad for you. It's just the bad outweighs the good, right? But one of the components of wheat that is responsible for the vast majority of people that feel bad when they eat wheat, they get bloating, they get gas, they get cramps. They're called FODMAPs, fermentable carbohydrates in wheat. They cause the gut symptoms. Only 7% of people, gluten causes the gut symptoms. Gluten doesn't cause the gut symptoms for the vast 93% of the people that have a sensitivity to wheat. It's not the gluten that gives them gut symptoms. It's the FODMAPs that give them gut symptoms. The wheat in Europe is much lower in FODMAPs. So you don't get the gut symptoms. Oh, I can eat it. No, you can't, because your immune system still reacts to the proteins, to the gluten, and you're going to get the antibodies to your brain or the antibodies to your kidneys or the antibodies to your joints. Just depends on where your weak link is in your chain. You're still going to get all that. So, Mrs. Patient, look, we did the initial test. You were very positive with wheat. You came in with Hashimoto's thyroid disease. And so you did the test. You follow our recommendations. Your Hashimoto's is in complete remission now. Way to go. And your wheat test is now normal. There's no inflammation because you've been squeaky clean, gluten-free. Way to go. Well, can I eat wheat now? Can I go to Europe? No. But they're going to do it anyway. So we just did the retest and you're normal. Go to Europe, have fun, do whatever you want. And when you come back, let's do the test again. Every single time, the repeat tests, their wheat antibodies have gone back up and their thyroid antibodies have gone back up. They got Hashimoto's again, or their rheumatoid antibodies have gone up, or their MS symptoms are back. But I felt fine. I didn't have any gut pain when I ate the wheat. It tasted so good. Well, but that's why. But people make stuff up. Well, it's the glyphosate. Glyphosate doesn't cause gut symptoms. Glyphosate kills the good bacteria in your gut. It doesn't harm human cells. It kills the good bacteria, which creates dysbiosis, which creates the inflammation in your gut. But glyphosate doesn't do that. It's not the cause of this. It's the FODMAPs.
Why do you think we didn't, after 10,000 years or so of eating this wheat molecule, why do you think we didn't either adapt to it, or the people that were, you know, processing it, which sounds like 100% of people, in a way that causes inflammation, why didn't they die out? Why didn't we die out, or why didn't we stop eating it?
Really good question. And the theory, it's not accepted yet, but the theory is it's because we have such a high amount of low-grade inflammation going on from all the chemicals we're exposed to. And I'm going to date myself. I grew up with Popeye, right? Popeye cartoons. I am what I am. That's all that I am. And then he eats his spinach and he goes and saves the day, right? So what happens, the more toxic chemicals you're exposed to, the more inflamed you are, the more active your immune system is, the less tolerance you have for an annoyance food. For most people, gluten, wheat, would be an annoyance factor. But they're so poisoned by flame retardant chemicals and petroleum products and heavy metals and glyphosate and everything else that we're exposed to today, they're so inflamed, they've got no tolerance for anything. So wheat is just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that quite a bit. You know, I have a three-year-old now, and my plan was to grow ancient grain of wheat, to grow probably einkorn. And then when we harvested this organic einkorn, I was going to make crackers from it and give our child a cracker every once in a while of this organic ancient grain wheat and see how his body responds, because he's going to get exposed to wheat when he gets a little older. You know, he's going to be eating pasta at some party or some or pizza and all that. So can we help his body develop a resilience, a resistance to it? But for many reasons, I wasn't able to do that. But we expose him every once in a while to a little bit, half a cracker or something. And I'm just watching to see, and I'm going to be doing blood tests on him again soon, to see, is his immune system still tolerant? Because he doesn't know it, but he lives a very clean, organic life. And very proud of that. He's just a beautiful little being. And I want to see, is it possible if a person grows up without a lot of exposure to these toxic chemicals, that they can tolerate a little bit of wheat on occasion without activating an immune response? I don't know. Nobody knows. No one's ever tested this. But, you know, then I see the chemtrails and I go, oh my God, we're all breathing that stuff. We're all getting toxic exposures, right? So it's impossible to keep away everything. But where's the threshold? I don't know, but that's something that I'm exploring and will be writing about in the future.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it. Now, this has been a really illuminating conversation, no doubt, for a lot of people. The idea that wheat, 100% of people should not be consuming wheat, is going to shock some people.
No. 100% of people should test accurately to see if their immune system is fighting wheat. And if their immune system is fighting wheat, stop it. Stop the exposure.
But was there any evidence in the research that there's people whose immune system is not biting wheat?
Yes, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What's different about them?
A couple of things. They've not crossed the line of tolerance yet. If you do good tests, and there are a couple of tests, the Zoomer is remarkable. Very, very accurate test. I don't have any ownership in the company. I wish I did, the laboratory, because it's really a great test, and their doctors are just startled by how wonderful these tests are in using them. But only one paper has ever come out, and they use celiacs. As far as I know, only one paper, where they gave celiacs sourdough bread. And there have been many studies with sourdough and celiacs. Oh, it's not so bad. Well, no, it's not okay. If it causes inflammation, you can't do it. And they notice that. Yes, sourdough, no, it's not better because you still get the inflammation. But they did a sourdough bread that caused no inflammation at all. A wheat-based sourdough bread. Now, to do that, they use 7 different strains of Lactobacillus sanfranciscus. Now, I'm not an expert on yeast, but 7 strains is a lot, right? But when they allowed the bread to rise using those 7 strains and they baked the bread, the celiacs, none of them had a problem. There was no evidence of any inflammation whatsoever. So it's possible, but it's not commercially feasible, that the 7 strains of Lactobacillus sanfranciscus broke down the proteins enough that we didn't get these clumps of proteins that active that got through the tears in the cheesecloth into the bloodstream. So it broke it up enough that toll-like receptor didn't identify, this is a bug. Toll-like receptor didn't do that. So there was no leaky gut that came from them.
Yeah, interesting.
And that was 6 years ago. I haven't seen anything since then. But that gives me hope. That gives me hope that one day someone will develop the strain of yeast that breaks down wheat comprehensively enough so people can eat it. I miss my croissants. I really wish I could have a croissant.
So maybe we should eat all of our bread and wheat products wrapped in sauerkraut.
Well, the concept is good. All disease begins in the gut. So if there's only one thing you're going to do, it's rebuild a healthy microbiome. That's the most important thing you can do.
Yeah. Well, it's been great having you here. I think that, like I said, there's a lot that's been illuminated here for people. And I think, yeah, we're going to have you back and we're going to have many of these conversations. And so if we want to send people into your world, into your books, into your links and all that kind of stuff, where are we sending them?
Well, our website is thedr.com, thedoctor.com. Just don't spell the word doctor out. But we just completed something that's really quite unique. I spent a year, literally 13 months, traveled to 7 countries, interviewed 64 of the world leaders on inflammation. And I put it together in a docuseries, which means every day there's a little story, you know. And so they're all 45 minutes long for the day. That's it, 45 minutes a day. That's plenty of information. And when you listen to these world experts talking about inflammation and where it comes from and how important it is to address it, you realize, wow, I can do this with our family. This won't be that hard. Okay. It's going to take some time, but I can do this. And then you start implementing some of the recommendations we give you. Like one of our guests, David Furman from Stanford. Dr. Furman runs the lab at the Buck Institute that NASA hired them to figure out why are the astronauts aging so quickly in space. And he found out it's inflammation, excessive inflammation. And so his whole world of research is about that. And you listen to him talk, and it's very, very interesting. Or Dale Bredesen, who's reversing Alzheimer's. You listen to Dr. Bredesen talk, and it's just exceptional. Or Dr. Yehuda Schoenfeld from Tel Aviv University in Israel, the godfather of autoimmunity. You hear him talk, you say, wow, that just makes sense. So we put this all together. It's called the inflammation equation. And if you go to theinflammationequation.com/Maddie, and you go there and register, you can watch the entire thing. It's 9 days, 45 minutes a day. It's all free. Everything's free. And this cutting edge information about 101. And so you really understand 101. And when you register, our gift to you right away, I give you the full 1 hour interview with Fran Drescher, the nanny. Now, Fran was diagnosed with uterine cancer. She's a 24-year survivor of uterine cancer. And she asked her oncologist, why did this happen? She said, I don't know, it just does. Well, Fran didn't believe that and said, I decided to devote my fame not to raising money for cancer research, but rather raising awareness as to where cancer comes from. And she founded Cancer Schmancer. And so you hear the interview with Fran. It's just fabulous. Go to your medicine cabinet. You know, she's got this Bronx voice. Read the label on the toothpaste. Why are you using toothpaste that says call National Poison Control Center if you swallow it? Why are you giving that to your children? And it's like, what?
Good question.
Wait, what? And if you go look at your toothpaste, unless it's organic, it says, warning, do not swallow. If swallowed, call National Poison Control Center. Now, if that doesn't wake you up to how you've been fed a bunch of lies for your entire life of what's safe and what's not safe, nothing will. You've been giving this to your kids or your grandkids every day for years, and it's poison. Well, my grandson doesn't look poisoned when he brushes his teeth. It's accumulative in the body, and it affects the brain, just like everything else we've talked about today. So go to theinflammationequation.com/Maddie. Watch the interview with Fran. Watch the event. You'll do an OMG. Oh, my God. Again and again and again. And then we give you the pearls of what to do about all this. You go to this website and you download the handout from NASA on houseplants that absorb 74% of the toxins in the air, the flame retardant chemicals, the Scotch Guard, the phthalates, the mold in the air. Plants will absorb all of this, get it out of the air so you and your kids are not breathing it. And we give you the handout for free. It's all free. It's all free.
Amazing.
Theinflammationequation.com/Maddie.
I'll put that link down in the show notes below so that people can get into that. And hopefully, yeah, hopefully many do. I would definitely encourage everybody. The more knowledge and education we've got, the better decisions we can make. And before we finish up, Tom, what is one piece of health information of all of the amazing things and deep things that you know about this world? What is one piece of information that you wish more people knew about?
There's one secret to success in shortening the gap between healthy lifespan and total lifespan. There's one secret, only one. And if you follow this one secret, you'll get it. You'll get it. What's the one secret? It's the subtitle to my second book. The book is called You Can Fix Your Brain. You know, I argued with Rodale Press for 2 weeks about the title of the book. But no, that's the title. You Can Fix Your Brain. And so I wasn't going to go for anything else. But the subtitle, just 1 hour a week to the best memory, productivity, and sleep you've ever had. You tell your family every Tuesday night after dinner or every Saturday afternoon, whenever it is. But at that time every week, don't bother me. I'm going to spend 1 hour learning how we can be healthier. And then you go to my book and you look at the 36 to-dos. Like, here are three URLs for glass storage containers, MilesKimball.com, Amazon, and whatever the third one was. You know, those are okay. Oh, I like those. And you order three round ones and two square ones and one for the pie, and you pay for the credit card, hit send, you're done. But it took an hour. But never again will you poison your family with minute amounts of poisons from storing leftover food in plastic containers. Next week, you go back and you look for the URLs for organic nail polish or makeup or shampoos. Next week, you get the handout on houseplants that absorb toxins. Next week, and every week, you allocate 1 hour because this is so overwhelming. No one can do this. If you try to repeat what you've learned here today to your husband or your spouse, you can't do it. It's overwhelming. I know it's overwhelming. But this is the secret to success. 1 hour a week. And in 6 months, you go to church and someone who hasn't seen, what happened to you? Wow, you look great. Wow, you look so young. Say, well, actually, I've shortened the gap between my healthy lifespan and my total lifespan. And they go, what? Well, you know, I'm gluten-free, dairy-free. We got glass storage containers. I'm using organic nail polish now and organic makeup and organic shampoos. And we've reduced our exposure to a lot of the chemicals in our home. And I've got an air filter in the house now and a water filter. And they go, whoa. You know, I mean, they just can't believe it. But you did it at 1 hour a week. That's how you do it. That's the secret to success.
Amazing. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it really pairs nicely with something that I often parrot on this podcast, which is one tweak a week.
There you go.
That's kind of the strategy. But no, thank you for your time. Thank you for this conversation. I'm sure, yeah, that a lot of people are going to listen to this, which is going to be fantastic. And I look forward to having you back at some time in the future.
Thank you, Maddie. Real pleasure to be with you.
Likewise. We'll see you later. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.